A long time later, it turns out that like 25 years ago or 20 years ago, Haridas, who's a musician at Ananda, recorded this beautiful piano versions of the chants, River of Joy, I think it's called, right? When John Parsons' wife was courting him, she used to invite him over and she would put on this beautiful piano music. And she won his affection with that tape, and it turned out to be the tape from Ananda. Isn't that something? So he sort of had this great debt to us, and so did she. Because you just don't know. Somebody who joined the church recently had read autobiography many years ago, and they were at their apartment house, and they were recycling their junk mail, and buried under, you know, buried up to here was this picture. They looked into the recycling bin and saw this picture of Yogananda and recognized it from the autobiography of a yogi. Pulled it out of the garbage, and they recently became a member. My favorite, though, was somebody who bought a calendar at a discount bin at the Safeway that was actually Kriyananda's words. He did these calendars. And she just lived on that calendar for a long time, and then one thing led to another. And the disciple is ready, the master comes. You just don't know he'll come. Okay. Any other comments or questions? I do have another chapter which I want to whiz through also, if there's anything else that you all want to say. Okay, I just want to touch a little bit on the statement that Swamiji makes in there in the next chapter, which is, even though you think you're working for money, if you do it with right consciousness, your gains are always spiritual. And then there's that statement of Yogananda's, making money honestly and industriously to serve God's work is the next greatest art to realizing the... Well, that's quite a statement, because there's several things intended here. One is to try to break down, which our culture is doing a pretty good job of, the sense of difference between that which is spiritual and that which is material. And Swamiji talks a lot about it in that chapter, about the man that he visited who said, you know, my real life starts when I get to my meditation room. And Swami just felt sorry for him because of all the time he had to spend doing things that he didn't think were related. It's very easy, depending on what kind of samskaras you have. Samskaras are past life impressions. You know, I know that for myself, and I've shared these stories with you, my past life impressions, I think, were in a lot of monasteries, and I was quite happy in those monasteries. I think by now I've transitioned way out of that, but I used to say if I was a little pebble and you threw me in the air, I would let me come down where I would naturally come down. I'd fall behind a cloister wall somewhere. I remember being in Greece, and just this little stone, we just were visiting some old monastery, this little stone cell with a little cold water tap and a little flat pallet. I just loved it. I just was so happy there. David just could not get out of there fast enough. Because he comes from the saintly king side of it, you know, from the monarch. When we were building this little house that we built at Ananda Village, which is now the guest house at the Crystal Hermitage, some of you have stayed in it. When we were building that, David's plans just got so grand. You know, it's an 1,100 square foot house. It was just like, honey, we're not the Maharaj and Maharani anymore. We just don't have the money. We can't do it. But his just energy like this, and on the positive side, what I learned from him was, let me phrase it differently. When we actually had to start building that house, I was very frightened of building that house because I had this real strong association in my mind that as long as you were poor, you were spiritual. And as soon as you got too much, then you wouldn't be spiritual anymore. David has always seen everything as a flow of energy. And however that energy manifests, you should just manifest it correctly, which is the way Kriyananda feels, who's also just has no sense of this is right, this isn't right, this I can do, this I can't do. You know, all those little fear-oriented thoughts that are judging, judging, judging. And so what Yogananda is talking about there is that energy, money, is a tremendous expression of energy. And the ability to manifest money is a tremendous expression of our capacity, which we get into next week, to concentrate, to persevere, to put out energy against obstacles, to be courageous, to be affirmative. If you can put out all those right attitudes in the field of making money, What you have really developed is this tremendous capacity to direct energy. And as Swami writes there, once you know how to direct energy, it doesn't matter. You just can direct it toward whatever you're attracted to direct it toward. So very often it's a stage, a necessary stage in our spiritual evolution, is to learn to make our ideals concrete, to really exercise our willpower and not just pray for deliverance. There's a story about Ramakrishna, who was a great sage of the last century who lived in India. And at that time in India, there were a lot of caste restrictions and so on like that, and there were a lot of orthodox people around him, and a theater people and dancers and so on were considered low caste. And Ramakrishna was a high Brahmin. And so this group of theater people came, and Ramakrishna welcomed them with open arms, and one of them became a great disciple of his, Girish Ghosh, I think, that's wrong, I don't have his name correctly, but anyway, he was a famous playwright, a Bengali playwright at that time, and many of the Brahmins were scandalized at the way Ramakrishna welcomed these low caste people, but they were really good artists, you know, they were great artists, in fact. And afterwards, Ramakrishna said he scorned their scorn, and he responded by saying, he said, look, the god they presently worship is the god of art, he said, but they know how to worship. And it's a very, very important point, because someone may profess to worship a greater good than art or a greater good than theater or something like that, but if you don't know how to worship, you're not necessarily a better devotee. And so someone may profess, you know, a kind of disdain for the material plane and a disdain for getting involved in business or in this, but it may in fact just be an inability to worship in the sense of saying that this is the central reality of my life and I will dedicate myself to it. Or an inability to simply do what is needful, to respond to life with an attitude of, if this is what's asked of me, this is what I'll do. And so very often, the peculiarity of human life is that we are put in this very difficult situation where earning a living is just this huge part of our lives. You know, the only exceptions are the tropical islands from time to time. Swamiji remarked about Hawaii after his first visit there. He said, before the missionaries came and really, you know, changed the culture and brought disease and so on, he said, living in Hawaii must have been like not quite incarnating on the material plane, because it was so beautiful and you could live effortlessly. You know, you just, the fish were in the ocean, the coconuts were on the tree, the climate was so comfortable. You just, nothing was required. You could just sing and dance and live, and that's all. But most of the time, we have to just put out a tremendous amount of energy just to make it work on a regular basis. And it's not like there's such a great good in that, I mean, in the end point, but the means is very important to us. And so especially, and the caveat that's important is especially when we do it to serve God's work. Now, God's work may be the maintenance of your family. God's work may be the creation of a company that you believe in that really does something worth doing. Just merely making money for selfish purposes or in the process of creating something that isn't worthwhile is people moving from being parasites to being merchants. And it may still be progress for them. You know, the people who propagate things that at a higher level you would realize are not valuable anymore may still not be the wrong thing for them. That's a very important thing that you always have to realize. But once you get selfish enough to put out energy for what you want, then you have to move to a higher level of doing it. And sometimes your own magnetism in money may be hampered by the fact that you're not idealistic enough about what you're doing. There is too much self-concern. Maybe there needs to be a dedication to a project you believe in more. Maybe tithing needs to come into it. Maybe there has to be a greater sense of, this is an exercise in training my magnetism. And Swami talks about the story, which is really the story of this book, which was what he had to do in order to build Ananda, and the years, the beginning years of it, when he single-handedly just had to earn thousands of dollars every month at a time when thousands of dollars was a lot of money. You know, I just had the realization, just reading this and thinking about this, that there was a point, Kriyananda was 22 years old, he met Yogananda. And he just came to California, became a disciple of Yogananda. 3.5 years later, Yogananda died. Kriyananda was a monk in Self-Realization Fellowship, which is the monastic order that Yogananda founded. He was there for a total of 14 years. He was 36 years old at the end of 14 years. He was thrown out of SRF, just expelled, without warning, just thrown out. He was a fully professed monk. He had nothing. He had $1,500. They gave him $1,500 when he was thrown out. He was forbidden to come and to even contact anybody he knew. I mean, his whole life, everybody that he had built his adult life on, totally forbidden. It was in New York City. As it happened, his parents had just landed in New York City from Europe. They lived in California. He got in the car with them, and he drove him back to the Bay Area, to Atherton, where they lived. He was completely alone and essentially penniless. And he just determined in his mind that he had something to do for God, and that was to build this community. And now, I mean, all of us are sitting here because he just didn't give up. I mean, it's really a phenomenal story when you really think about it, and that's what that book is. But how can you say, in the course of that, he had to raise, you know, thousands and tens of thousands, you know, probably millions of dollars by the end, and gradually attracted people, now hundreds, thousands of people who were all equally committed. But in the early years of it that he was describing there, you know, he was such a monk, and he'd even earlier in his life, when he was 16, his father had offered, because his family was well-to-do, not fabulously wealthy, but his father was an executive in Esso Oil Company, and, you know, they lived in Scarsdale, they lived in Atherton, they were well-to-do. And his father, at the age of 16, said, well, I'll buy you a tuxedo. And Swami answered, essentially, I'll never need it. You know, in fact, he said, I'm never going to earn enough money to ever pay taxes, which I don't think he actually ever had. But he just knew that money was not his goal, and then he became a monk, and then he found himself wanting to do something, and there was nobody to pay for it except him. But the other thing which is very interesting, and this has been a key in Swami's life the whole time through, He always made money by doing what he really believed in. You know, he made money by teaching. He made money by singing. He made money by writing songs. He made money by writing books. So the goal was to pass out the spiritual word, the spiritual teachings that his guru had given him. And if he needed money, he did more of that. Instead of saying, I want to do this, so I'm going to earn money so I can do this. And he often always says to us, whenever we feel like we have a financial problem, he'll say, why don't you teach? Why don't you write? Why don't you make a tape? You know, why don't you do something that furthers your primary mission and then work in that direction? Now, not everybody is capable of doing that, but it's a very important aspect that he never changed what he was doing just because he needed money. He just did more of it with the idea that Divine Mother would help him, which he always did. And during those years, he had a schedule that looked like this. He would teach all over the Bay Area, from Marin down to San Jose. And he would teach Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. And then and Friday nights too, I think. And then after his classes on Friday nights, he'd teach all the way in Sacramento. He'd drive to Ananda Village. When he got to Ananda Village, he would dictate the 14 steps at night. Saturday morning, and all day Saturday and Sunday, he would give retreats at Ananda Village. Sunday afternoon, he would give private interviews. Sunday evening, he would drive home, and then he'd start again. And he just did it day after day, week after week, and then committed to build buildings, and just endlessly. But, and all the time it was money. All the time it was money. And he would say, Divine Mother, why are you doing this to me? Why is it always money? But he writes very simply there, when it was done, he realized it had never been about money. Money had just been the force of discipline, of faith and determination and effort and complete one-pointedness, this absolute concentration. There was just no space for anything else. It was just, this is what he'd set himself to do, and this is what he had to do. And money plays into it. But if money is what it is, you're not really doing it anyway. You see, it's a very powerful story and a very important one to realize. If you have the energy and the determination, Now, people say, do what you love and the money will follow. I've heard that said. Yes, if you do it with sufficient magnetism, concentration, and determination, it will. It won't follow just because someone told you that. You know, it follows because, as I said at the beginning of this class, you know, it takes a lot of energy to earn money. And if you can put out that much energy in a directed way, you also earn money, if it's your karma, bear in mind. And Swamiji says something very interesting in this. Many times, I mean, this has come up, and it was like he said he never cared whether he would succeed or not. It's just that he knew he had to do it. His goal was to try. I mean, because there was no cooperative spiritual community based on Paramahansa Yogananda's teachings at that time. There was nothing. It was a completely new idea. There was no model. There was just Yogananda's idea that he wanted it. But that's the kind of committed energy. He just felt, well, this is what I feel my guru is calling me to do. And if he wants me to fail, that's fine. But I'll just do my absolute best. But you see, also, that awareness of what he was really trying to do, just as I started about how we lose our energy because we get anxious, we get afraid, we have all these other things that dilute our energy, and the biggest one of the things that dilutes our energy so much is the fear of failure. And we spend so much time being afraid that we're going to fail that we don't put out enough energy to succeed, and we run this continually self-fulfilling prophecy. You know, where Swami's attitude always was, I will give it my all, and if it fails, that's God's choice, not mine. You know, very, very fascinating when you look at the example of someone who's done something remarkable on a great scale. And it's funny also, this is just one last point about this. At Ananda Village, now most of the roads, some of them are actually asphalt and some of them are chip sealed, which is this cheaper form of paving. But for many, many years, the roads were dirt. And to get them paved at all was just a phenomenal accomplishment. And I remember this woman from Southern California drove up right after we had paved the roads at all. And she was with a group of other people in the van. And when she turned her van onto the roads and saw that the roads were paved, she stopped the car and fell out and sort of knelt on the paved road like that. And everybody else in the car was like, I mean, this is a paved road. What is the big deal? And she, I mean, I always appreciated her for this. She said, you have no idea. You have no idea what it took to pave this road. You know, you have no idea what effort was required by hundreds of people to bring this to the point where we could pave this road. And it's sort of, when you see something already accomplished, you tend not to realize that individuals just like yourself gave their life's blood, just like that violinist, I'd give my life to be able to play like that. Well, I did. Right? And it's so, I love it with Ananda since I've been here for so long. People will sort of say, why is this not done? Why is that not done? And I always say, my God, to get it to this point where you could criticize it, you have no idea how much effort went into that. You know, it's like when you bring something up from nothing, even once in your life, it just changes you completely. You just get this completely different orientation about what can be done. If just once in your life you set your mind to do something and do it, you are never the same after that. Never the same. And so money, because it's required of us, and because the feedback is real direct, you know, is a really clear way of finding out what we're made of. And once we find out what we're made of, then we have the courage the next time and the next time and the next time and the next time. So don't set your heart to becoming a millionaire, but set your heart to doing something good and put yourself into it completely. And you'll just have remarkable results. It's a certainty. Because it's Dharma. And where there is Dharma, there is always victory. Okay, any comments or thoughts or questions? Well then, we will call it a night. And we will see you next week.